This is Sam Amick.
I'm Fred Katz.
And I'm Anthony Slater.
Listen to us throughout the playoffs on the Tampering Podcast as we break down the most important games and series.
We'll also take a look at the big picture implications for each win and each loss.
Might even have a Lopez reference in there. Join us for the Tampering Pod every Tuesday right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Hey guys, it's Dave DeFore. Join me and Tony Jones every week over on Game Notes, your Utah Jazz podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. We break down the highs and lows from every Utah Jazz game, and right now we're following along on their hopeful championship run in the playoffs. So come hang out with me and Tony every single week over at Game Notes, a show about the Utah Jazz, only at The Athletic.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Guys, I gotta say, Bucks in four. It's a sweep. The Bucks are just better.
Like, they miss PJ Dozier, man. Like that's where their defense is.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
Ooh. This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
With Zach Harper and your favorite athletic writers.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
This is good. This is good stuff.
We now join programming in progress.
This is a conversation I actually want to listen to.
This is the fraudulence.
Because, see, now, because I agree with Jay, but also, Zach, I don't know that you're wrong, because I think maybe we're under
team. No, Dave's right. This Suns team is so much better than this Nuggets team.
Yeah.
Healthy. I don't
and,
care.
Yeah. Well, now, hold on. Now, this is the thing, though. We don't know what the Nuggets were going to turn into. Like, they were 9-1 after the Aaron Gordon trade. Aaron Gordon being the fourth guy was kind of sweet for them. And so, yeah, anyway, I think that's something we should definitely talk about. Like, that is...
Here's who they beat.
Top of mind.
Here's who they beat. Hold on real quick, because I'm pretty sure...
Oh, no. That run, no. And that run, I don't think is like... They're not the best team in the league, but I do think that if this team had had time to build chemistry with that dude out there, because they were one guy short, I thought. And...
Yeah, one guy's Kevin Durant.
Well, no shit. but you know, I did think that they like this would be a much closer series, obviously, if they were healthy. But Phoenix right now, they're just playing their best fucking basketball all year long.
No, I think it could have gone five if they were healthy. I think it could have gone five. I'm with that. I think they would have had a chance at winning a
game. If they had Bielitsa, it would have been a sweep.
You're right. They would have swept the Suns if they had Bielitsa. Are you kidding me? That's Professor Big Shots to you.
Why does it take so long to start Monty Morris? Like, it's time to go home and you're starting your best backcourt player.
Look, man, you don't just
first
take
of all,
Austin
hold on.
Rivers
when Monty Morris is obviously your best backcourt player, that's when you know you're screwed.
Well, hey, whoa. Right? You're not going to come out
Monty
here.
Monty would start. Monty would probably start for like five teams, right?
Yeah, like the worst five teams in the entire league.
He could play.
Yeah, and it's like you have guys like that to insert into this starting lineup when the guy ahead of him gets hurt.
Right.
You wait until
but remember though, he was hurt.
Yeah.
Remember he was coming off the injury. That's so true. Like his minutes were still being.
Let's save this shit for the pod. I want to.
Is everybody recording?
No, I wasn't recording.
Okay. I have a recording.
I'm recording
so
now.
We can always throw this at the end of the pod or something.
Yeah.
We'll let Jade play around with it.
Yeah. But I really do like. I do think that that's a conversation that's worth having.
Yeah. Yeah, but like as soon as Murray went down, they were screwed. Like there was no chance they were going to do anything of actual substance. And their thing was they were going to be defensively challenged no matter what.
Golden State ball. And Murray's down and hurt. Oh my goodness. Oh, Jamal Murray is in massive pain.
But they needed their offense to be so good that it didn't matter. And once you lose Murray, you lose all hope of that. And then on top of that, like losing Murray means Rivers and Gordon all of a sudden start feeling themselves and taking step back bullshit and not running as much offense as they should through Jokic.
So we're just doing the show now, right?
Yeah, I'm recording. We're all recording, I think, at this point. So I don't even care. Here's your cold open, everybody.
Good.
Bruh. New York strip steak? Ooh.
edition of the Athletic NBA Show. Jade, leave all that in. All of that. We're on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. That's Jay King. That's James Edwards III. That's Dave DeFore. And we are rocking in this Sunday night as we watch the Nuggets. Look, by the time we finish this episode, we're not going to know if they've been eliminated yet, but we're pretty sure they're...
Good night, sweet Nuggets.
You know what's weird about this? You know what's weird about this Nuggets thing is that I would have guessed at the trade deadline that Aaron Gordon was going to bring all of that Orlando Magic success to the Nuggets. And you know what? It looks like he did. He brought all of it.
Hey, now, all right.
No, look.
Great joke. But come on. The guy goes from where he's the second best player on the Orlando Magic behind Nikola Vucevic, another one of your favorites, to being like the fourth best player and maybe even the fifth, like depending on the night, you know, and how guys are looking, like Monty Morris coming off the bench or Will Barton if he's healthy. To being the fourth or fifth guy, it was a great trade, and I think it was going to work out great, you know. But Jamal Murray tears his ACL, and just like, you know, I mean, we watched Kyrie do that. Whatever happened to his ankle today? I mean, it looked like the actual bone touched the ground. He rolled it
that
so hard.
Nasty.
Yeah, it did not look good. But as we just watched, I mean, it's a game changing injury when you lose the guy who was, you know, one half of your 1-2 punch. So
I think we're being disrespectful to the Suns. Suns would have smoked them anyway. You know why? Because DeAndre Ayton is like basically playing Nikola Jokic to a standstill.
But hold on. It's way tougher to guard Nikola Jokic when he actually has a pick and roll partner.
Right. You've got Jamal Murray and all of a sudden
it makes Jokic's life so much easier. And then, like, I don't know. The Nuggets backcourt is probably as bad as we've seen a backcourt in the second round of the playoffs that I can remember.
Faku Campazzo is 5'9".
And I respect the hell out of Faku. I really do.
So do I. He's playing his ass off.
And Luke Dawson Rivers, he's carved out a long career too.
You wait until it's time to go home, though, to start your best backcourt player. Like, I understand you had to ease him in minutes, whatever, injury.
Michael Malone, but it's like, that's disrespectful to Flint. I'm shocked.
That's disrespectful to the city of Flint to have Austin Rivers and Campazzo starting above Monty Morris. Monty Morris could start on teams in this league, and you literally have guys like that.
He's a Flintstone.
James, I got to be honest. I don't think respecting the city of Flint is high on any coach's list here.
It ought to be. It's the only thing that makes sense, because I've watched Austin Rivers for a long time, and I like watching Campazzo, but when it's time, it's nut crunching time, you got to play your best player big minutes, and Monty Morris is just now starting and it's not working out. But still, I'm just baffled that it took until the last game of the season for that decision to be made.
To your point,
by the way, I mean, anytime you're playing in a series against Chris Paul, you know it's nut crunching time, and you need to play Monty Morris.
Literally.
He's pulling everything. But the
other side of that is when Jokic is your only playmaker, you kind of need someone else in the second unit. And so I get why they did that. Like there's so much on Jokic right now, and there's so much on Michael Porter Jr. There's so much on Monty Morris, of all people. Like, we are talking about whether they should have started Monty Morris earlier. And that's when you know you're screwed.
Right. Well, the game, hey, what was the game? Against Portland.
No disrespect,
I was like, literally just thinking to myself, man, this series is different.
Shouts to Mo Peterson.
Just have PJ Dozier.
Charlie Bell.
Even.
Yeah. No, look, the injuries matter, but I think the Suns team would have kicked their ass anyway. Maybe not swept
them. I agree
with
that.
But I just think the Suns team's a lot better. And look, Aaron Gordon seems way more concerned with what his scoring is in a dunk contest than anything that's happened. Like, you say that they need another playmaker. He averaged 4 assists this season on the Magic, who can't score. Like, if he wants to move the ball, he can move the ball. Like, I just, this is what I didn't get at the trade deadline, right? And granted, like, it was a different team with a healthy Jamal Murray. I'm not going to pretend it wasn't. But the idea that Aaron Gordon was going to tie everything up into a pretty little bow, like he's fucking Rasheed Wallace going to Detroit, didn't make sense to me. Like, he's a nice player, But there's no part of Aaron Gordon's career up until this point where you thought, dude, that dude's a winner.
I agree, but if you have him as your fourth guy, don't you feel pretty good?
Here's the thing about
why everyone sold themselves on Aaron Gordon. Because everyone sold themselves on the idea that Aaron Gordon would be different outside of the Orlando Magic. And part of that was having a legitimate point guard next to him for the first time ever.
Wow, shots fired.
So when Murray went down, the idea of that kind of exploded.
He's not a real point guard.
Jamal Murray, is it?
He's not a real point guard. He's not even a point guard on this team.
He's a 2021 point guard.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
He would have made everything easier for Aaron Gordon, and like I feel like Aaron Gordon's the type of dude that when things go a little bad for his offense, he tries to like do way too much himself. But when things are going very good for his offense, like he can fit in, he can cut, he can do all of those things. And so the more talent that's around him, the more likely he is to stay away from his worst habits. But when there's less talent, he's kind of reverting back to the bad habits, and
Aaron Gordon shots, and Jamal Murray would give you less Aaron Gordon shots.
He takes 8 a game. Like what? How few shots do you want him to take?
He disappeared, right? Yeah. Like, see, this is the issue: is that he hasn't stepped up at all in a way where you can even say he's attempting to help replace some of the Jamal Murray stuff. Because look, at the end of the day, yeah, it's great that in theory you got this guy to be your fourth or fifth best guy, but that's not how it is today. And you've got to be able to just do more. And you know, again, we're asking Monty Morris to do a lot, and Monty Morris is not Aaron Gordon. I think Aaron Gordon should be better. And to you know, call him out a little bit, I actually think that completely makes sense. It's just that this team is not the team, you know, like I don't think the Nuggets are looking at what's happening out there and feeling awful about Aaron Gordon.
No, the trade should have happened. They didn't give up a whole lot.
Right. They didn't. And then the other thing about this trade was, you know, losing Gary Harris, who probably wouldn't even be playing now anyway, but theoretically that's another guard.
Be nice to have him on
that
Devin
they would
Booker.
Have had. Right. Yeah. And so that's the thing is like, they really are just kind of, I mean, they're super shorthanded. And let's not forget, man, the Nuggets are the last of the final four from the bubble still going, and they look dead. I mean, you know, we can make fun of Jokic for how he looks, but there's a huge difference between the way he looks now and the way he looked even 3 weeks ago. What? But his legs in game three, I watched it happen. Like the best defense that they had was that first quarter of game one, and it was all about Jokic going out high and blitzing in the pick and roll. And then, you know, they'd have the help rotate and he would recover. Well, I mean, they wore him out too fast. And also, it wasn't working because Chris Paul and Devin Booker are really fucking good. So I think, Zach, like, I'm with you.
Right, and he's not – and he just – like, he can't defend in the first place. Like, I'm done with this internet shit.
No, he defends differently, man.
Like, he can't defend.
He doesn't defend like we all just expect NBA centers to defend at the basket. And so, like, end-of-game possessions, you know –
I expect him to not screen his own teammates.
Well, all right. Well, I mean, that happens all the time. Chris Paul is going to do that to you. But I think that, like, the end of game stuff, like, he should not have been subbed out. When was this? Was it against Portland? He got subbed out.
It was like game four against Portland, something.
They
shouldn't
have done it. You know, you were talking about Michael Malone's weird coaching stuff.
Michael Malone, my apologies.
That's one of them. Because Jokic is the best option that he has as a center defender. He just doesn't defend the rim. Like, the issue is they don't, like, Paul Millsap getting old has kind of sapped that guy who could offer a little bit of extra rim protection, but they just don't have a Kevin Durant who can be that sort of, you know, backline helper. I mean, you know, Anthony Davis would be a great fix.
Their defense has nothing too. Like, NBA defenses need versatility, and they have two guards who are basically point guard size or less.
And they're staying in drop.
They have they have Michael Porter Jr., who still doesn't really know what's going on, even though he's improved.
Has he?
And they have Jokic, who
looked that improved this
round. Who is like
getting smoked.
Has definitely got a little better, but he's still not going to be like Tyson Chandler at any point in his career. Like they miss PJ Dozier, man. Like that's where their defense is.
What are we talking about?
Give JaVale McGee.
But we should be talking about the Suns. Let's stop talking about the
Wait,
Nuggets,
hold on. No. We're not going to say their defense fell apart because they don't have PJ Dozier and then just let that walk.
I didn't say that.
Jade, play the tape.
I said they could use PJ Dozier, though, which is the truth.
They miss PJ Dozier.
That's where their defense
Jade, play the tape.
They miss PJ Dozier.
PJ Dozier. That's where their defense
I mean, I know this team, you know, definitely needs to be that guy on defense.
Jade, play the tape.
They miss PJ Dozier.
That's where their defense
The players swore by you then.
Jade, play the tape. They swore by your talent and your
workout.
They miss PJ Dozier.
PJ Dozier.
What sold them on you, and how did you continue to apply that in the way that you did?
That's where their defense is.
You know, my teammates just seeing me come in every day.
I said they could use PJ Dozier, though, which is the truth.
Let me ask you this question, because, one of the excuse machine options is the last team from the bubble, right? Or last team to play deep into the bubble. I want to see if you guys can pick up on a trend here. What do Aaron Gordon, Will Barton, Facundo Campazzo, Austin Rivers, and Jermichael Green all have in common?
They're not
None
Nikola
of those
Jokic,
motherfuckers
right?
playing that series.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say
they're
trash.
Jokic is the only guy on that team that matters, right? Like, I mean, let's just be honest
I like
about
Will
this,
Barton.
Right? Jokic is the only guy that matters, except for Jamal Murray. So no Jamal Murray, and Jokic is the only guy that really matters. Michael Porter Jr. tweaked his back in game one, so you're not even getting good Michael Porter Jr., whatever that looks like. I do think, like, you got to say, they're certainly out of gas. And Jokic is the only one that actually matters.
I'll tell you what that tweak back is. A tweak back is Jay Crowder and Mikal Bridges up in his ass. That's what that tweak back is.
Those dudes. You're a Jay Crowder guy now, huh?
What? He's about to lead the team to the finals for, you know, two straight years.
That's what I'm saying.
Win the finals.
That's what I've been saying all along.
Hey, this hasn't been talked about when it comes to the Suns. Are they the only team left that has like a, how do I describe it? Like there are no worries in their world. Every other team.
Everything's house money at this point. Like
yeah,
there's no injuries. Like
there's a good vibe.
Yeah.
Everybody else is like, you could go through every single team still playing and point out something that, like, Atlanta's not having fun anymore against Philly. Philly's worried about Embiid's knees crumbling. Obviously, the Nets have issues. Milwaukee has issues. The Clippers and Jazz have issues. Like, Phoenix is going into a finals, and they're going to have rest, a Western Conference finals with rest and great spirits. And I think, I don't know if that calculates into the equation at all, but I think that should mean something. Like, it's house money, like you said.
They just got jinxed by James Edwards.
No, this isn't exactly the power rankings.
Yeah, this isn't
the Madden curse. The season, let me tell you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, man, you're right. And then I think you've got to say, after seeing like DeAndre Ayton in his first two playoff series.
Dude, what the hell?
Yeah, he's getting better.
Look, he was good this season. He wasn't this good.
Well, he's a 16-game player, man. Like, his game is so funny. And, you know, I got into this conversation on Twitter because, you know, we talked about how hard it is to project defense, right? And I know I'm very famous for talking about how I thought Jaren Jackson is, like...
Are you very
potentially,
famous for that?
Potentially, like, Tim Duncan level.
Is
defender.
Famous the right word?
Well, infamous.
I asked you if you could be a Hall of Famer, and you said yes.
I did. Because I really just believe in that guy. He still may wind up being a Hall of Famer, by the way. But I will tell you that I think that it's getting harder and harder to just say, after you see a guy play 1 year as center, that this guy is going to be a good defender or not. I think that is like Ayton is a perfect example of that, because there's so many people that watched him, and maybe it's just the discourse, but they watched him for 1 year at the University of Arizona playing for
under that fraud, Sean Miller. All
that
right.
Coach,
like, that dude's a fraud.
Right, yeah. Thank you.
Sucks. Fraud.
And playing Miller. Out of position so often. Cause you know, Rustic was playing there with him. And just making these judgment calls, and certainly a lot of people saw him play a lot of basketball. I did too. And the stuff that I paid attention to with Ayton is, look at how beautiful it is when he runs down the court. Look at how that guy moves side to side really well. Wow, he's
just
really well
gorgeous
built.
When he sprints,
I mean,
down the court.
It's just like the guy is, I don't know, man. He's one of the best athletes that I've just ever seen in person. Just the way he moves is very graceful. and he's a sharp guy. So all of this just makes sense. And then we saw the development when he got Ricky Rubio there. And then with Chris Paul, I mean, I said this. I mean, Seth and I wrote a thing about Phoenix, a preview. And we said it. We were like, Chris Paul is going to be the biggest boon to DeAndre Ayton's career. And this year is like, we're going to know if Ayton is going to be like a real player or not, because he's going to play with Chris Paul. Man, Ayton fucking rules.
Oh, man. He's a real player. He sure is.
Yeah. And what I love about the team, though, right, is that, and we talked about this a bunch in terms of their decision making as an organization, but they didn't take the 8-0 in the bubble last year and go, here we are, we've arrived.
Get it?
Right. Hey. Well, they went out and they actually did improve, right? Like they took an opportunity to improve at the position that they knew they needed to improve the most, because like Rubio's offensive limitations were an issue for them. And to be able to like luck into Chris Paul, I mean, that's just amazing. James Jones, I think, built a basketball team. This team is timeless. Yeah. It would fit in just about any era. If you look at it, they have traditional positions, but they can also play positionless. And I mean, it is very clear, like Chris Paul is their point guard. Devin Booker is their shooting guard. They have their wings and they have a traditional center. Yeah. It is a really cool thing to watch.
Shout out to the Suns for not fucking caring about a contract and going to get a good player. Like, it's
is that still a bad contract?
Call
the
me
contract
shocked.
He's going to opt out of and get more money. Is that still a bad contract?
Man, if he takes them to the finals,
there is the one thing of just like after the honeymoon period, it gets a little awkward, right?
Yeah. Well, I keep thinking Chris Paul, maybe for the rest of his career, just should go around and boost young teams. You know what I mean?
Resurrect teams.
Nomad. Absolutely. Yeah.
It would be amazing. You want to impress me, if he went to Minnesota.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You want to impress me? Go make Minnesota or Sacramento a winner. That's
I always
what
wish
I
LeBron
seen.
Did that. Like, just there was follow part around of me that thought he was going to do that. Just go to different teams every 2 years, and that would be his legacy. That would be. But now it's Kawhi. So Kawhi ended up jumping in on that ship.
Right.
Was actually Danny Green, really, is who's doing it. But
yeah. Oh, I mean, if we get a Danny Green versus Jay Crowder series, I mean,
it's going to be amazing.
The tension between you and Jay will never be greater than that.
Well, you know, I mean, Danny Green might not even play, man. This calf strain is that's going to be rough.
Yeah, that's at least 3 weeks, right? Like, it doesn't sound good. Speaking of injuries, guys, if you were hoping for more injuries during the playoffs, you got them on Sunday. As Kyrie Irving landed on Giannis's foot and left the game about halfway through the second quarter, did not return. We'll find out if he can even make it Tuesday night in order to play in game 5. But James Harden's not coming back anytime soon, it doesn't sound like. If there's Kyrie Irving at 70% or whatever that percentage would be, or Kyrie Irving not at all. James, the Nets might be screwed here. Mike Budenholzer may have done
they went
this
from
by
invincible
default, right?
Like, 2 games ago.
This flip so quick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it was, I don't think it was going to be that bad going into game 3 and 4, just because like you are going to get a little bit of a boost at home, right? Especially with role players. But man, like, look, unless Joe Harris becomes like Klay Thompson, I don't know what the Nets do if they don't have two of their three best players.
It's, and the thing with the ankle, as somebody who's an anointed doctor after covering the Pistons for many years, Reggie Jackson rolled
you're
his
a doctor
Dr. Edwards
yeah. Reggie Jackson rolled, like, there's the grade 3 ankle sprain, which they say at that point it's you'd rather break it, and what Kyrie had looked very bad, and then I think the report came out he was on crutches after
and then walking boot too.
Like, that sounds like grade 3 territory, which if I recall was like, it could be like 3 months. And then you lose depth because, I mean, shout out to Mike James. It's cute. But yeah. And then you just lose. Harden's not coming
back. It's not that
cute. It's not that cute. Harden's not coming back. And I want to shout out Bud for a second. Did Bud foresee a Steve Nash? He was sending messages through the media. Our guys need to play low minutes. We need to get them along this series, because Steve Nash is playing the hell out of his players. KD with 42 again tonight. And it looks like at the right time, 2-2, the Bucks look semi-rested. The Nets look the opposite. Shout out to Bud. He may have had the foresight to.
What the fuck are you talking about? Like, are you out of your mind? They're in this because two of the three best players are injured. Unless he went in there and told Giannis, yo, make sure he lands on your foot. I don't know what strategy has been employed.
But I will say their offense was a little bit more offensive, right? Like they were actually running actions to get stuff.
Rusted.
But they still are doing stuff that it just drives me nuts. You know, like every Giannis three is a victory for the Nets defense, and every single time
Giannis,
he isolates.
I agree with that.
I know.
That's
not like right, Bud sitting around the sideline. This is on Bud.
That's Giannis.
See, this is on Bud. We need you to pull up here.
Huh? But that's on Giannis, though.
I agree with that. That's on Giannis.
No, that's on Bud, man.
Right.
That's on Bud.
It's not like Bud sitting there on the sideline like, Giannis, we need you to pull up here.
People were going out at Bud. That's Giannis to me.
Coaches need to coach. And if your star player does things that shoots your team in the foot, he needs to not do those. And look, man, like it is literally like this is do or die for Bud in particular.
We're talking about the NBA, though.
I understand.
When do the star players ever not do what they want to do?
I don't know, man. But if you can't handle the star player, maybe that says more about you than the star player.
Three point shooting. You've probably been on the side, Dave, and correct me if I'm wrong, that Ben Simmons needs to shoot threes. Because he needs to loosen up the defense a little bit.
Yeah.
So coaches, they have to give you at least a little freedom to shoot threes.
100%.
Now, do they want Giannis pulling up for three when like they're on a little bit of a run and they could extend it like he did in game four?
No, he walks into threes with 18 seconds on the fucking shot clock. Every single time, like I don't have any hair on my head, but I reach to pull it out because it drives me crazy.
Protect the beard. Don't pull the beard.
I'm not doing that. Can't mess with the brand.
I will say, beyond the injuries in game four, the Bucks offense just flowed so much more freely. Kind of like after game one of the Bucks of the Heat series, rather, where, you know, they won that super tough, gritty game one and then came back in game two and just kind of opened up. And it was like they needed to grit one out in game three, which was like just disgusting. And then it opened up in game four. They started hitting threes. They started shooting a ton of threes. PJ Tucker even started making threes. And then things kind of got rolling for them. And when they're rolling, that's a tough offense to stop. And Giannis got going downhill more. Giannis started feeding guys. And Giannis just being Giannis, basically, is a huge difference.
When Giannis isn't trying to be Kobe Bryant, he's really good.
But he's like unstoppable.
Yeah. But you have this shit where it's like, look, man, their offense wasn't that good today. Like it flowed
it was
more,
just
but like they didn't
yeah,
make shots.
Yeah, it was
shots.
Just better.
No,
they didn't make shots.
No.
Like,
well, they did
like
make
they,
shots.
They pretty much won
they
the game in transition.
They take 27 threes in the first half. Like they got much, much better looks.
Giannis took five of them.
And things are going to go better when Chris Middleton's finally outplaying Blake Griffin, who's playing very high minutes and is looking like Detroit Blake Griffin now. Things are starting to come together. They need to shoot better. I agree with Zach, and I agree with all you guys. The offense flowed more. They weren't hitting shots, but it just feels like they're a Milwaukee Bucks performance away from closing this. Like, I don't feel like it's...
Feels like they're a Milwaukee Bucks performance from being down 3-2. Like, I don't know what that means in Milwaukee Bucks performance at this point.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what that meant either, honestly.
I'm sorry, you're right. Right, I don't know, like, what we've seen from the Bucks.
It's a perfect down-the-middle statement. Like, that's either a good or a bad thing. We don't know yet.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I said that very stupidly. But I don't know. Like, I've always felt like this whole series, like, it just wasn't going to be as bad as it seemed. And
I think the key to Game 5, other than Kyrie James, is going to be... What contact do they allow in Brooklyn for Kevin Durant?
KD's shooting 20 free throws in game five, man.
He might, dude. Like
he should have in this one.
They swallowed
the
whistle.
If PJ Tucker's not allowed to be, well, the officiating in this one, Jesus Christ. Who puts Tony Brothers, Scott Foster, and Ed Malloy on an officiating crew for a playoff game together? Like, and I'm not even saying that hurt it hurt everybody. You didn't know what was a foul from 1 minute to the next.
The play inside was so physical. And you know, Blake was taking liberties with his physicality.
He's been very physical, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily good basketball, but there are times where I'd rather him just swallow that whistle like they did in this game than give us free throw contests,
but,
man.
But here's
I'm
the thing.
I'm just not in the mood for that.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I don't think they swallowed the whistle in this one. Like, I don't. Like, I felt like game three, they swallowed the, game three, they just let them play, right? It was consistent. In this one, you have a play where PJ Tucker is dry humping Kevin Durant up the floor and then touches him on the arm. And they're like, oh, foul on PJ Tucker. It's like, how was, if like either all of that was a foul or none of that's a foul. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, it was so inconsistent. And I just like, I think it kind of ruined the rhythm for both teams. At least in game three, they knew by like halftime, like, hey, we're just gonna have to be like motherfuckers tonight. Like, we're just gonna have to like be more physical than the other team because they're allowing it and they continue to allow it. And it ended up being a great product. Today, I don't think was a great product.
Yeah,
the
it was
Bucks
ugly.
Have done a great job on KD the last couple of games. And it makes that job so much easier when you don't have Harden and you don't have Kyrie.
Yeah.
And you can focus everything on him. Like, KD's job after Kyrie went out of game four was so much tougher. The amount of defensive attention he got was so much more. And he's already got PJ Tucker hounding him around in the first place. And PJ Tucker, he's still got it defensively. Like, that dude is still a dog. And he's making Durant's life tough. And you know, when they can sell out the first two.
What are you talking about? KD lit them up in the like quarters two through four in game three. In a bad first quarter, that was it.
Yeah, game three was a little bit tougher for KD, but it wasn't what game four was. I mean, PJ Tucker really
game
was
four,
inside
like,
his jersey
in game four. Yeah.
KD in game three, 30 points on 11 of 28. If you hold him to that, you've done a hell of a job.
Yeah, right, that's a win.
But most of that was like, most of that scoring and most of the bad shooting happened in the first quarter.
Okay, like the late three that put the Nets up one, right? Like, that was perfectly contested. What are you going to do better? There's no one on earth who could do it better. KD just hit shots sometimes. So, but I think they've done a much, much better job on him. And without those other guys, he's going to need to be incredible. And it's going to be harder for him to be incredible because they're going to be able to help off Mike James and Nick Claxton and all the other guys who are going to play extra minutes because Harden and Kyrie are out.
Well, Dave, like this is a game where like game five is where Joe Harris has to take like 12 threes.
They started the game with a Joe Harris three and I loved it. Right. It was like, that was the exact right movement for them, right? They needed to get Joe Harris going early because that's just going to make it so much easier when the main guys find him as that release valve. But I mean, what happened to Joe Harris, man? I don't think that the Bucks are really defending him all that well. He missed like nine wide open shots in that one game, in game three.
Game four, they did a better job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Game three, he was wide open all night.
But he can usually hit contested looks, man. And I don't know what's going on. Maybe he's got something, you know, some kind of an injury happening. We don't know about it. But they have got to be worried about his shooting. I think that they need to do the exact same thing in the next game because now you don't even have Kyrie. So it's going to be even harder, I think, to get Joe Harris open. I mean, think about like the way it looked when Duncan Robinson wasn't hitting those contested shots. That's kind of what we're looking at with Joe Harris and how much it's hurting Brooklyn's offense. But especially with no Kyrie, I mean, Joe Harris is it. It's Kevin Durant, it Joe Harris, and a bunch of guys who go out there and play hard.
Feels very targeted.
Can the Nets survive without KD? Well, say, I mean, you know, Kyrie's out, and yeah, I agree. It doesn't seem like Harden's coming back. Can the Nets survive without KD playing 46 minutes?
Yes.
Wait, he's playing 42 to 44 minutes. I agree with that. Sure. He has to, right?
I don't think they can survive make it close? Anyway. I think they're done if those guys don't play.
Because I agree that you're going to be able to stay off so many guys. I mean, it's going to be more Bruce Brown minutes. It's going to be more Mike James. I think it might be done regardless, but KD's going to have to do something heroic in 46, 45, 44 minutes to at least make it threatening.
I think they can still win the series, but it's going to depend on how the officiating of PJ Tucker on Kevin Durant is. Like, if they allow contact, then I think they're fucked. And if they don't allow as much, because you know that, you know, halfway through that game, Sean Marks is probably emailing the league office like, guys, I got a problem with this. Here's some videos we put together. There'll be more later. Like, you know that they're like, the back channeling happens all the time, right? Like, we make fun of Daryl Morey for it, but it happens. It happens with every team after every game. And so, I gotta think that whether they make it a public thing or not, and I don't think they really had a chance to because of whatever the hell happened in the arena right after the game that caused an evacuation. It was a fire or something. I don't know that we got the public comments on that, but I guarantee behind the scenes the Nets are going to be sending stuff like, how is this not a foul? How is this not a foul? How is this not a foul? So if they allow KD to roam free and not have that contact, then I think there's a pathway to where the Nets can still win the series without those two guys. I just don't think it's terribly likely.
I think it's probably over. This feels like that Raptors Bucks series from the Raptors championship season. Actually, that's not original to me. Shout out to No Tech Ben, who I was talking to, and he actually reminded me of just how similar it is, dropping those first two games and then everything just kind of changed where I think the Bucks probably should have lost game three.
Oh, they absolutely should have. Like, there was some huge, that late layup by Jrue Holiday when Bud, I'll give Bud some credit here, not calling a timeout as they were coming up the floor. That was,
it was so bad.
Some of the worst defense I've ever seen in a late game situation. Like, because you had Jrue Holiday on the right side of the floor and Kyrie and Joe Harris have him contained. And then for whatever reason, Joe Harris decides to do like the Monte Ellis, I'm going to stop playing defense and just try to poke the ball from behind.
Yeah. Better put ball to rebound.
Like, there was no reason for him to do this, and he just does it. And then that puts Kyrie essentially on an island. He starts dribbling towards the middle where Blake Griffin is. And then as he spins back, Kevin Durant is like 2 feet from the basket on the weak side and never steps over. Like, you're 7 fucking feet tall.
Holiday scramble, gets inside.
If you just step over and then, okay, maybe he drops it off to PJ Tucker and now you're forcing PJ Tucker to make a pressured shot there with probably some rotating defense, or PJ Tucker kicks it out to Brooke Lopez, who hasn't really been a good 3-point shooter this year. I still would like Brooke Lopez in that opportunity, but you don't know what happens there. But instead he just stands there and watches a layup. And like, it couldn't have been worse defense as a team unless they had just taken the ball from Jrue Holiday and put it in his own basket for him. That's the only way.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
It was stunning how bad that was. And I'm just like, I'm like, Joe, what are you doing?
I was going to say, I wonder if they expected a timeout.
Everybody was expecting a timeout, man. I really think they were. I think they did.
What about your life makes you think you could steal the ball from Jrue Holiday if you're Joe Harris?
This series is such a reminder of how quickly a series can flip. Like, 4 days ago, 3 days ago, whenever it was, like, I was ready to
we were ready for a funeral.
I was ready for Bud to get fired.
Yeah.
I was ready for the Bucks to need to trade half their supporting cast. I was ready for the Nets to rattle off three straight championships.
I mean, shit was coming out about Bud going to the Pacers on Tuesday.
I mean, have you guys started to play this out yet? Like, the Bucks, how do you feel about them against the Sixers? You know, I mean, Embiid with the knee, like, who even knows what that's going to look like? No Danny Green.
Well, I mean, Danny Green not being there helps the Sixers, but I do think with with Embiid's knee, I mean, I am a little worried. Yeah.
Wow. jerk.
You're proposing a snow tire day at Yankee Stadium.
But I just think, like, it's just kind of crazy that all, like, I mean, the finals is gonna now.
I'm here for it.
Yo, a Suns Bucks finals is a disaster for this league. Jay, play the tape.
You never count your chickens for the hat, and you never keep your apples in a bag. Never go out blind and spend your last dime, and you never count your chickens for the hat.
I mean, I don't know. I think it'd be fun to watch. Yeah. Utah, Milwaukee would be fun. Yeah,
you're not trying to get the casual fan with us.
Like, I mean, you know, it's funny. And you know, we talk about this stuff all the time about the large markets and stuff. You just got to sell these teams to these small markets, man. Like, it's a small market final. So if you're a Memphis Grizzlies fan, you better be tuning in, because one day you're going to want, you know, Utah Jazz fans to tune in when you're Grizzlies. Well, they're not going to make the finals ever, but, you know, theoretically.
Got a Hall of Famer over there. Jaren Jackson Jr.
Might have two. Might have two, man.
I was going to say Dylan Brooks.
Of
course.
You mean future Boston Celtics? Dylan Brooks, who's going to come play guard for the Celtics?
Dylan Brooks plays his balls off.
I just want it to be remembered. James put Suns Bucks in our group text. I think Jay said I was an idiot.
He probably did.
I probably did. Which it is an idiotic statement at the time.
Yeah, but to be fair, we thought you were golfing for like a month straight, so we didn't know locked in you were.
We literally for like 3 weeks were like, "Hey, is James back?" I mean, you told us about this tea time that you booked like 4 months ahead of time.
Stop. Yeah, James, like, sorry guys, can't record at the country club today.
Sorry guys, I'm training for the Masters.
What about that Sixers team? Do we feel like this is over between the Sixers and the Hawks? Like, because that one,
The
Hawks had a fun game one, but the last two games, there's just been a stretch of basketball in both games where the Sixers, and in game two, it wasn't even the great players for the Sixers. It was the bench. It was Shake Milton and Dwight Howard just like, yeah, we're so much tougher than you. And then in game three, there was a point where Embiid and Simmons just like, oh, by the way, we're so much bigger. Like, there's nothing you can do here.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, their size really has like a cascading effect. It's like you have to double Embiid, and he's handling in doubles awesome lately.
Yeah, he's like a killer.
Sometimes he just splits them and goes. Sometimes he waits for him and finds somebody. Sometimes, you know, he'll draw a foul out of it. Like, he used to be very, very poor at that, at least for the level of player he was. And he's turned that into such a strength. And like, he found Thibault on a cut that was just a beautiful, beautiful pass. The way he handles doubles, and then you have to double him, and then it's like, well, Tobias Harris is still bigger than most of the guys on your team, and Ben Simmons is bigger than everybody on your team.
And no DeAndre Hunter, man. Like, that's rough.
Yeah, that's a killer. And so I think the Hawks they're just in rough shape. They had a great run. I don't see it lasting much longer. But Philly's defense is just awesome, man. Like, and when they turn it up, they can just really, really guard. And they're so big and so long that they just put teams in a lot of bad positions on both ends. And Embiid is playing at such a level that he just picks you apart when you have to double him. He picks you apart when you don't double him. It's just they're fun to watch. They have been like just really, really in sync lately as a team.
I think we talked about it after game one, whenever that pod was, how the last few minutes of game one, even though Philly lost, I thought has since set the tone for the rest of the series. Like, it was all the stuff Atlanta was doing was cute, dribble drive kick, the step backs. Like, it was cute. And then as soon as Philly realized, oh, like, we're just stronger and more physical, and you guys can't do anything when we, like, press up on you. Like, that has carried itself. The physicality has carried itself after that. And I don't know if that was, like, a revelation moment, because I think Philly's played with that type of presence most of the year. But I think for that specific matchup, especially with the way Atlanta started, having those final minutes in game one, again, despite the loss, I think they went into game two like, we're just going to just out physical these guys, and it's played its way out through every single game since then.
Yeah, and I think on top of that, like, it seems like they've stopped playing Trae Young to score.
Yes,
right. Like they're not treating him like Damian Lillard and Steph Curry. Like I think they realize, like, yo, this dude's looking to pass like almost every time, and he was like, he killed the Knicks, obviously, but he killed them in that first game because it was just like it felt like, oh no, we can't let him get a shot off. And he's right. Looking for that. He's looking to get in the middle of the floor and find everybody else. And then when you adjust to that, then he's looking to score. And I felt like that adjustment, like, he's still playing well, but it doesn't seem to have as big of an impact anymore.
Good point. I agree. Well,
and Ben Simmons, just with so much more length, like, he's just bothering him.
Yeah, him and
Thibault. A lot more than Danny Green.
And Thibault,
Danny,
too,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, and Thibault. And Danny Green, like, let's be honest, man, like, he's not the individual defender that he used to be. This is a wing team defender. That's where he adds your value. Mm-hmm. And so, like, in a series against a guy like Trae Young,
I wish Waz was still here to talk about Danny Green, man. He's a huge Danny Green fan.
Shout out to Waz.
But, Danny
must have walked by and commented on his shoes once, and then he was like, literally. Oh, yeah, that's my guy.
That's his guy. It's him and Bledsoe.
Now it's Bogey.
That is true. So that was the big change. And honestly, that was an obvious thing from the jump. I don't even know what Doc was thinking in game one, right? Like, this should have been a sweep from a talent perspective.
Sure, absolutely.
And it was purely letting Trae Young get going the way he did in game one that lost him that game. So, you know, I think that the Sixers have been damn good all year. I still don't think they shoot enough threes, though. And so they're going to run into a math problem against the Bucks. Because the Bucks are good, can shoot, and play defense.
Yeah, that's interesting, that idea, if it is a Sixers-Bucks conference finals, because I don't think Embiid, like, respects anybody on that Bucks team, and we know that Giannis doesn't respect Ben Simmons, like, he's called him a fucking baby after dunking on him. Like, he's, like, the levels of disrespect there might be... That might be more of what we need than we need, like, a healthy Nets Sixers final.
I actually really want that series now. I forgot about the baby stuff.
Yeah. Oh my God. He's a fucking baby. Like, like, how do you get dunked on that someone calls you a baby? That's not right.
Like, I forgot all about that. You know, this is the thing, though. Like, that series, and we'll obviously talk a lot more about it, but I mean, if Giannis is playing predominantly center in that matchup, they could really run them to death.
Yo, you guys are doing way too much looking ahead of the Nets.
I was
right
gonna
now.
Say we've done a complete 180 in a week, baby.
Like we've already written off the Nets.
Yeah, we're talking Bucks, Philly. And you never count your chickens
for they have. Like, Harden couldn't possibly come back. Like, Kyrie couldn't possibly come back at any point the rest of the series. I'm not comfortable talking about Bucks versus anybody in the Eastern Conference Finals game.
Who the fuck are you? When since when?
I mean, it is Budenholzer season.
I know. Again, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. All right. What about Clippers Jazz? I got to admit, like, I thought the Jazz were going to sweep them after game two. And I know that's overreactionary, but I was prepared for the Clippers to just tuck their tail and get destroyed in game three and then be out. But with
playoff P, baby,
yeah, right, back. Exactly. It's also playoff P season. So, did anything happen in game three that maybe changed your mind about this, or maybe you believed in the Clippers coming back altogether, regardless? But I, like, James, I cannot believe that in game two and then in game three, there were so many times where I just said to myself, thank God for Reggie Jackson if you're the Clippers,
dude. Like, there is a real world in which Reggie Jackson is not in the NBA after the Pistons bought him out. And I believe this, just knowing Reggie a little bit, that PG's relationship is the reason he got it. Like, the stink around, you guys know, you guys have been around the league. It's not like people love Reggie Jackson, especially at this point. Like, he's not a name that people have ever really talked about as a good locker room guy. Though I think he was kind of a nice guy. He's not a good locker room guy. The way he plays isn't conducive to winning. And I mean, he goes to the Clippers, and him and Paul George are like best friends, and I don't know if he goes anywhere else. And then he has like this revelation where he looks much healthier. The three ball is the big thing for him. If you remember years ago, Reggie couldn't shoot at all. And the way he's shooting the ball now is, I don't even know. It's shocking as like somebody that watched him for every day for a couple of years. Like, it's shocking how well he shoots the ball. And teams still don't tend to respect him. They're letting him shoot. He makes tough shots. He was a guy, too, that clutch, if you look at clutch scoring, like in the fourth quarter, even those later years in Detroit, he was near the top of the league. And at the end of the day, he's a bucket getter, and he feels rejuvenated. He looks rejuvenated. He's able to be the fourth, fifth guy on a team, and that's more of the role for Reggie Jackson, and it's paying off for him. And, I mean, he kept him in it in game two, and then, yeah, game three at 17 again in 29 minutes.
Yeah.
Shout out to Reggie.
He's making himself some money.
He is. Like, he's going to get a contract.
Yeah, he should at least, like, he might at least end up with, like, that 1-1 mid-level, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, he's probably going to get, I would guess, he could get the full MLE from somebody. With the way he shoots, man, we know how valuable that skill is. And he can attack closeouts. I mean, you know, James just basically laid out all the stuff that he's pretty good at. As long as he's in the right role. Again, it's like the Aaron Gordon thing. He's the perfect guy for this Clippers team in that role, right? The guy who's going to be the release valve, going to hit open shots. And he's really like kept them in a lot of these games longer than they had any right to be.
A caveat with that I think is interesting, because you don't really see too many fourth guys on a team who have had experience as 1A, 1B on a team. So it's like usually in those situations when you're kind of relying on your fourth guy to hit big shots or your fifth guy or whatever, like sometimes they don't show up. Like we could go through the list. I mean, Harrison Barnes and Golden, like we can go down the list. Aaron Gordon struggling. But Reggie has like those moments, like big moments. So now you're just moving him back into a place where he's not the focus of the defense. I think it's super interesting, that dynamic of a guy who's had to be the guy in the big moments and then fade back literally within just like a year. And take on those opportunities. He doesn't obviously seem fazed by those late game opportunities and shots.
From a playoff P perspective, Jay, if I say the rest of this series, Paul George is going to be, how would you fill in that blank?
Worse than Joe Ingles.
I love Jay, man.
But like, That's kind of where my expectations are. I'm not even going to lie to you. But here's the thing. Like, the Clippers really, really need Paul George to be very good.
Yeah.
And the Jazz have more threats. Like it can be Mitchell. It can be Ingles. It can be Jordan Clarkson. It can be, if he gets back, Mike Conley. It can be, you know, Gobert with 14 and 20 and five blocks. It can be
Bogdanovich can get that.
Yeah, it could be Bogdanovich. So like, they just have a lot more threats to me. And I also think, I mean, obviously Donovan Mitchell's health is number one for the Jazz moving forward. If he's not right, they're in a lot of trouble. But like, as good as Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are defensively, there's not one person on LA who can keep Mitchell in front of them by himself. And I loved what the Clippers tried to do in game three, which was just kind of double him, get the ball out of his hands, force other guys to do it. I think other guys will beat them. Like the Jazz, they're too skilled for that. But it forced them off balance a little bit and forced them out of what they normally do. And like, they've been a well-oiled machine all year. And so when you kind of try to force them to do things that they're not used to, maybe that makes a difference for a little while. I don't know. I don't trust the Clippers. I don't trust Paul George in the playoffs.
You're only saying that because of the entire history of the league.
Yeah. Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. I mean, come on.
No, but I'm saying that because of everything they have done as a team. Forget the history of the Clippers organization. Forget everything that happened when Chris Paul was there and when Darius Miles was there.
Shout out to Sean Livingston.
What if Darius Miles catches strays here? What the?
And when whoever else was there.
Chris came in too. Shout out to him.
But like Paul George, his recent history has not been a consistent playoff history. And I'm at the point, honestly, like, I know I compared the Jazz to the Atlanta Hawks earlier, and I thought they were destined to face a pretty early playoff
apologize
exit.
For it right now. Apologize for it right now.
Are they the favorites right now? With the Nets banged up?
I say Phoenix still.
It might be Phoenix, but
I don't know, man.
It might be Utah, too. I mean, yeah. Phoenix is going to be two juggernauts. That's the thing. If Conley is healthy in the next round, you know, and they make it to the next round, Utah and Phoenix could be one of the best playoff series we've ever seen.
Like, I want it so bad.
It's incredible balance between the two teams.
Hold on.
He's about to come forward.
Did you just say Suns versus Jazz would be one of the most incredible playoff series of all time?
I agree with him.
It's a one versus two seed. They're pretty good. Got some good players. Why wouldn't it be?
I mean, it's rare that you a lot of bad players in a conference finals.
Right, finals, yeah. But yeah. I just mean, like, with the matchup here, like, you look at, I mean, the Styles makes fights thing, right? And it could go completely south because Chris Paul just hits that little, that right elbow jumper 45 times in three games, and it's just a wrap, right? Very easily could happen. But I don't know, man. I think Donovan Mitchell and the way he's playing right now, and if Conley is healthy, he's so much harder to guard. That could be like a real like all time series. I don't know. I want it. Like I
like that. Think I've talked myself into the Jazz being my favorite from here on out.
I think I'm riding with the Suns.
I'm with the Suns. But I think a lot of people are with the Suns.
I think I'm riding with the Suns.
I get that, but also like the Jazz have just played beautiful basketball all year long, and unless the Nets are totally healthy, there's no team that's going to like totally out talent the Jazz where like they're totally outmatched. Like that's just not going to happen. God. And even if they do face the Nets and even if the Nets are totally healthy in the finals, like the Jazz could score 135 points a game against that Nets defense. They would shoot so many threes. Nobody could stay in front of Mitchell. He would create a whole bunch of good looks for a lot of very good players. And it would be like 140 to 135 games. Now I don't know who would win, but I've talked myself into the Jazz.
Jay's 180 without an apology is iconic.
Oh, there will be no apology.
180 without an apology is I love it. It's on brand.
Oh, well, I mean, you essentially compared Jeff Teague to Donovan
Mitchell. You that's what you did.
You're Mike Budenholzer.
That's what I fucking realized this whole time. Jay King is Mike Budenholzer.
Michael.
Like he's all about Jeff Teague. He's all about DeMar Carroll.
Hold on. Play back the tape of last podcast when I just tortured Jeff Teague and said Budenholzer should essentially be fired for even playing Jeff Teague in a playoff game.
You threw the nicest strays at Jeff Teague last week.
Jade, play the tape.
He played Jeff Teague 14 minutes.
That was a big problem.
Teague he's just not going to be a threat on offense.
He gave them nothing.
He's not going to be a threat on offense. That's a nice way to say washed. He's not going to be able to switch onto Durant or do much of anything against Irving. Like, Jeff Teague is going to give you very little in this series. And that's part of the reason why DiVincenzo is such a huge loss.
You won't apologize for comparing the Hawks to the Jazz. No, I'm not letting you get away with this. This is bullshit, all right? This is the most offended I've been. I don't even give a fuck about the Jazz, but I'm offended.
How many teams, Jay, are the 2015 Atlanta Hawks? Is it like six in the league?
Whoever he doesn't believe in this week. That's who it is.
That was a sign of respect because the Hawks played a beautiful brand of basketball. That was some of the most fun regular season basketball we've seen in a long time. They played great basketball.
Yeah.
And the Jazz are that this year. And like the Lakers, who would have had a lot more talent than them, were injured and got beat in the first round. And the Nets now would have a lot more talent than them. They're injured and may get beat in the second round.
I like listening to you scramble in real time as you like slow words down, trying to figure out how you're going to get out of this one.
I'm not getting out of it. I'm like, getting myself into this.
It's like listening to the Wile E. Coyote podcast. Like, that's what it is.
Oh, no. I'm not getting myself out of anything. I'm getting myself into this one. Jazz. 2021 title favorites. You heard it from me.
As much as all like the Jazz, just really quick, there's a real chance in which this series draws out another week and Phoenix has just been sitting at home chilling. And for that, not that alone, but that's kind of the cherry on top for me as the Suns is a favorite. Like, there's about to be some serious. Like, I think this Utah Clippers series at least goes six.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm crazy.
I think what's Phoenix interesting is if the Clippers pull this off.
Is that a good thing, though? Or is it a bad thing? Because, you know, there's a lot to.
I may have just killed the Jazz, you know? Too. I may have just destroyed their chances just by saying they're my favorite.
I honestly, sorry, you talked for 4 minutes. I have no idea what you said. It was expert gas bagging. I don't know where the fuck you stand on this, Jay.
In the moment, I like understood what he said, but then when you like say it like that, Zach, I like thought back. I'm like, what the fuck did he say?
Think about it right now. What did he say?
I was pretty clear. They're my favorites right now.
He's like, it could be he's 148, clear. No, here, 136. Here I don't know who wins.
He's very clear. That the Utah Jazz are his favorite right now. Okay.
Right now, yeah.
Because they remind him so much of the 2015 Atlanta Hawks.
Which didn't win the shit.
Horford and Millsap would have won a title too if LeBron and AD had gotten injured. If LeBron had gotten injured, honestly, that Horford Millsap year.
They would have beat the Warriors? You know,
they would have. You know, the Warriors didn't have KD yet.
What?
He said, oh, you know.
They didn't have KD yet.
What are you fucking saying, Jay?
Obviously, they weren't going to beat the fucking Warriors, man.
I love Jay, dog. Oh, my God.
They didn't have Jay Crowder.
I'm in tears.
I had somewhere I was going to go with this, but I think I'm just going to end the pod. That's going to do it for us. Thank you to James Edwards. Thank you, Dave Dufour. I don't know what the fuck
I wish
JK
Waz
did
been here to hang up,
I'm sure
man.
You enjoyed it. For Jade Hoy producer, I'm Zach Harper. Keep it locked in on The Athletic.
Sepulosa. Sepulosa.